Welcome to the Keys of the Kingdom with Brother Gregory of His Holy Church.
Welcome to Keys of the Kingdom. I'm Brother Gregory, and we're talking again about the Kingdom of God, and we're in our third hour on participation. And we've already talked about this article that was written by a fellow at Altmarket named Brandon Smith, and we've been going through his article, which I thought was a very good article, and we linked to his article on our website, preparingyou.com. And you can look up participation or non-participation, because that's the name of his article, and see our article. And eventually we'll post these audios there so that you can read right along with his article if it's still up, and what we have to say about what he had to say, so that you get a kingdom perspective in what he was sharing from his heart. And we're reading down in his article. He has just talked about two choices that the government will have if you start becoming independent, self-reliant communities. One is admit that you do not need them anymore and fade into a fog of history, or reveal its tyrannical nature in full and an attempt to force you back into dependence. And they will do this by excluding you from any of their benefits. And of course, that's exactly what happened in the days of Jesus Christ. Now, they had a benefit system. They always had a benefit system in Israel, and it was called Corban. It was where you sacrifice to your minister, you give him something, and he helps take care of the needy in your society. And the needy in your society would be usually widows and orphans, or families that are having a hard time because of physical infirmity or defect or health or something is causing them to have a hard time, other than a degenerate behavior, an immoral behavior. If you're having a hard time because you drink up all your money, you have to stop drinking or we're not going to help you. You have to starve. You have to go hungry. We may help your kids more than we help you, but we're not going to provide for those who are immoral and lazy and selfish. You don't work, you don't eat. If you can't work and you are someone of character or have been in the past, we're going to try to help you out. If you are just absolutely starving, we might see to it that you get a little bread so you don't completely starve. But we're not going to have anything to do with the immoral, unvirtuous members of society that are lazy and blood-sucking parasites. We're just not going to help them. They can go to the men who exercise authority. And this, of course, is what happened at Pentecost, is all those self-reliant, hard-working, virtuous people became Christians, getting the baptism of Christ instead of the baptism of Herod. They were cast out of the system of welfare and its identifying stone that showed that you were a registered member of their system. And they had to fend for themselves. And when hard times came, they didn't get any help from the temple that was run by the Pharisees. They got help only from the living temple made with living stones that we call the early church. Now, your early church, or your church today, your modern church today, doesn't really help people. They send men and women and children who have needs to men who exercise authority, and they've lost the elements of a free society. They don't know how to do them. And if you start doing and becoming that independent free society, they're going to reveal their tyrannical nature. And they will do this by saying, you know, if you don't comply with our rules and our regulations, and you don't voluntarily comply, we're not going to let you fly on our airplanes. If you don't sign up for at our temples for our social welfare, that's what people don't realize. The Nicolaitans and the era of Balaam was a system that was a stumbling block put before the people. Both those words, Nicolaitan and Balaam, mean conquered people or oppressed people or people under authority. That's what it expresses the idea of. And what they were doing was they were eating meats, benefits, that were the result of sacrifices to idols. What were idols? Things made by the hand of men. It wasn't a statue, wasn't an idol. It was systems of authority established to provide benefits for society by forcing the contributions of the people. And there were two kinds of systems, the ones that used force that John the Baptist talks about, and the one that John the Baptist was preaching, the one that used faith, hope, and charity, free will offerings. If you have two coats and your neighbor has none, you share. You choose to share. You do this through ministers, but you choose to share. You take care of the weak and the sick and the needy of your society through charity. This is what Christ taught. This is what John the Baptist taught. It's what Moses taught. Love thy neighbor as thyself. Free will offerings, free will offerings, free will offering. That's it. That's as simple as the gospel can get. The other system does it through compelled offerings, through men who exercise authority, and Jesus said we were not to be that way. This is the division between a real Christian and one who takes Christ's name in vain because he is following the doctrines that God hates. The doctrine of the Nicolaitans that says that it's okay to eat the benefits, consume the benefits of men who exercise authority, benefits that were sacrificed to these men of authority who often had statues and badges and embossed symbols of their authority. And that's what they called idols. That was a symbol of their authority. And they had them in the temples of Saturn where you registered your birth and these other temples where you got your free bread, usually in a little building next to the temple itself. The temple itself, there was usually a giant vault and treasury that was guarded. And that's where they kept, and that's what golden calves were and the golden statue in front of Athens. This was their reserve fund that you could see that there's lots of gold here, lots of money. Everybody can have faith. In that, not in the statue like it's some sort of spiritual idol, but because it's made out of gold. And they got gold. Our social welfare is secure as long as they have that. We don't want to deplete that. They have some money back there in the treasury to help out the needy if we fall on that need. And the more the people became dependent upon this, the weaker society became. So Christ, Moses, Abraham preached a system of living altars where you gave to men that you trusted to take care of the needy, and if they stopped doing that, you stopped giving to them because you always had that choice because it was a free will offering to take care of others. This is the gospel of the kingdom. If you're not working towards that and that righteous care for one another in community, you're not a follower of Christ because this is what he preached. So anyway, he says that if you don't participate in that system, they're going to attempt you to force you back into a dependence upon that system. And that, of course, is what they did in Egypt. And that's what they did in Judea. And that's what they did in Rome. That if you were not going to get a membership card for their system of social welfare, their system of Corbin, you're not going to be able to go here or do this or do that or do this, and they to cause it that you might die, you might perish, you might falter, to force you back into the system. And that, of course, is what the Mark of the Beast is all about. If you don't get their number, they're going to try to force you back into their system. Now, the first ones who come out are the ministers. So if you want to be a minister of Christ, In what this fellow is talking about in his article of non-participation, he's talking about there's going to be some sacrifice. There's going to be some, you know, really hard sweat and toil. If you want to be one of those ministers who really serve out of love instead of out of force, out of the love of John the Baptist and the love of Jesus Christ and the love of the early church, then give us a call. Join us. And we'll see if you have the heart of a minister or the heart of a tyrant. Because you need, if you want to be free, you need a government that has the heart of ministry. And in order for those ministers to minister, you need to give to those ministers. Not to build crystal cathedrals and live in million-dollar mansions, but into actually taking care of one another. Can you do that? Do you want to do that? Do you want to be one of the elders? Do you want to be one of the ministers? Do you want to try your hand at ministry? You can go back to being one of the elders. But there is a separation of church and state. In God's kingdom, the people are the state. All the right to choose, all the liberty to choose on how to govern yourself in relationship to your neighbor remains with each family. And all the right to minister what you give remains with the ministers. And you elect them by your contribution. If you don't think they're doing a good job, you stop. You don't have that option with any other government. But with the government of God, you have that option. Problem is, most of you are bound as surety for debt, so therefore you need to remain friends with the unrighteous mammon and fulfill your contributions. Now, there may be ways to decrease that, but they will take some of that away from you and try to whip you with whips and whip you with scorpions. And you will have to pay. But if you want to be a minister of God and forsake all like Christ required of his ministers, we'll show you how to do that. But we cannot be health, education, and welfare for the people unless the people contribute to us. And you have to decide who you want to contribute to. What minister do you want to support? What minister do you want to... Because if you're forming congregations of record and you're not tithing, tithing means 10 families, their share is called a tithing. It's not necessarily 10%. You may have to give 20%. You may at times, in hard times, have to give 30 or 40 or even 50% like the rich man. You may have to. But that's between you and God. You don't have to because we're going to kick in your door. That's the other kind of government. If you don't learn to live in God's government, you better just resign yourself to being good servants in man's government. Because they're not going to let you go. And they shouldn't let you go. You, the slothful should be under tribute. But if you will for a season forsake the benefits of those who exercise authority, which they can't give you anyway without cursing your children, because they're all in debt, every one of them, all throughout the world is in debt. You know, so you have to seek that independence. And you can do this with the miracle and help of God. And you will get that help if you become the prodigal son returning to the ways of the Father. Now you know the ways of the Father. Now you must do them at your pace. You know, the prodigal son, he might have started with baby steps, but, you know, eventually he had to pick up the stride a little bit and head back to his father's house. To do what? To serve. And you have to do the same. You do that. The more you do that, and I don't know if you're doing that, I don't need to know if you're doing that. I know what I'm supposed to do. But that's between you and God. But the more you do that, the more you come to serve, to lay down your life for love of others, not just love of yourself, but for love of others, the more the Father will run out and meet you. And you need that, because you ain't going to make it back on your own. Because you're not going to do this by work. But if there is no works, your faith is dead. And we started this series with a quote from the Bible. 1 John 2, verse 4. He that saith, I know him, I know Jesus, and keepeth not his commandments, is a liar, and the truth is not in him. And he doesn't know Jesus. He's probably a worker of iniquity. And you'll know which one they are by their fruits. So who is seeking the kingdom of God and his righteousness is he who is seeking to serve others. He doesn't need to see a beggar starving in the street in order to contribute to his minister of his choice. How much does he give? $10? $100? How much did he make this year, this week, this month? Did he make $50,000? Well, he says he's got to give some to Caesar. So what did he actually make? Because he didn't make the money that went to Caesar, so we'll have to subtract that right off the top. Maybe he paid $20,000 to Caesar in property, income tax, sales tax, what have you. That all went out. So he's down to $30,000 if he's $50,000 bracket. So what would your tithing be? $3,000? Did you give $3,000 to the church this year? To the love of Christ? To take care of the needy of your society? You know, if you have 1,000 people in a network of congregations, and each of them had some similar story, or maybe even a little less, 2,000 people, give $2,000. That's $2 million a year. I think we could help a lot of the needy in that network with that, and wisely do it. And you will have direct input into how we do that, because you have direct input into which minister you choose. You see, this is the way Israel operated. This is the way the early church operated. If they saw their ministers making bad choices as to who their ministers would be, they didn't have to give to them anymore. Man, you amazing how that was straightening people up. It's just like that guy who we talked about in an earlier show who was, you know, playing his Wii and jumping around and all this kind of stuff, but couldn't work. You know, because work made him so depressed. He could have his earrings and his girlfriend and live off of her food and his food stamps and his welfare check and her welfare check and still prey on the good kindness of others in their community who should actually kick them in their rear end and say, get busy. And we just recently had a discussion on the ministers group about a course we're putting on. And we actually have an educational course to educate people on how the church actually worked in the first century and how that translates into today's legal systems. And we give the course away for free. You just have to sign up for it. And we have one starting here shortly again. And you can sign up for it for free. It doesn't cost you anything. But it isn't really for free, because somebody had to work and work and work to create this course, to find the information, lay the information on somebody else who put it in the form of an online course. We offer it for free, and you should offer free will offerings back and pay your share for the course. I mean, if this was some Patriot gathering, they could charge you $250. I've seen people charging $1,500 for a course on, you know, how to become free, etc., etc. And of course, it's all usually a bunch of hooey, and they just get your money. And I know guys personally that I've come across over the years that do this, and then they'll change the whole name, and they'll change their name, and they'll do it again. And they'll run around and they'll suck everybody's $250 entrance fee up again and again to hear the same old repackaged claptrap. That doesn't really save anybody. Doesn't really help anybody. It actually gets a lot of people into trouble, and I've seen the people lose their homes and their families and their jobs and go to jail even, listening to some of this stuff. And I've exposed it, and even when I exposed it, showed that the guy was lying about things that he was claiming, people didn't want to disbelieve it. I always tell the story, and I'll tell it again real briefly here, of when I was in the military. Which I was in the military many years ago. Fascinating story with me in the military. But I won't tell you that part. I'll save that for some other time. But anyway, we were in chow line, and I was working in the mess hall then. This was way back in basic training. And I had KP duty that day. So I was working there, and I was helping dish up food for people. And the guy had a bucket of grease just melted down lard, and he had it sitting on the stove there, which was a flat surface that he was making pancakes on, which we didn't get pancakes very often. And he was making these pancakes, and actually they were making eggs too, the eggs and pancakes. It was one of the few meals that were really decent. But it was just grease, and he would ladle out some of that grease and pour it onto the skillet and cook the pancakes in that grease and the eggs in that grease. But it was melted, so it looked like, kind of looked like maple syrup. And he put it out there where anybody could reach it from as they were coming down with their trays. And guys would get their plate and put pancakes on it, get the eggs and everything, and then they come up and they would see that big stainless steel pot with a ladle in it. And they thought, oh, is that syrup? And I would tell them, no, that's not syrup. That's grease. And they would look at me and they would look at the guy cooking. I was serving the next little thing there, whatever it was. I don't even remember now. And they would look at that guy and they would look at me and I would say, that's not syrup. And he would look at them and he would smile. He wouldn't say, he wouldn't tell them it's not syrup. They wanted to believe it was syrup. It was grease. And they would put it on their pancakes. And that guy would just sit there and keep smiling. And I would say, tell him it's grease. And he wouldn't do it. And they didn't want to believe that it was not syrup. They wanted it to be syrup. And they put it on their pancake. You guys have been doing that for years. You want to believe that this will set you free. That this guy, if I give him $250, he will show me the secrets of liberty. Somebody comes along who actually has a solution. And they say, we will show you this for free. We will put on seminars and we won't charge for seating. Not because it's free. I mean, it costs us. I've driven tens of thousands of miles to try to bring this message to people. Never charged. Did it for free. Have all the books out on the internet. You can download them for free. They're not free. They cost me. They cost others. Huge sacrifice. My family has sacrificed my time away from them to do this for you. For free. But it's not free. But you don't owe me anything. I'm not charging you because I did it for Christ. If you take it for free and use it for free and don't offer anything back, you don't owe me anything. Who do you owe? You owe Christ. I told a guy once, he owed me money. Another story, you're getting two stories now. He owed me money for work I had done for him years ago. And he didn't pay it. And he'd done this with lots of other people. He usually stiffed them and stuff. And he made a habit out of it. And he'd come from a big city where he got away with this for years as a contractor. But this is a small community. You're not going to get away with this forever. And he owed me some money for work I did to him. And I told him what it was. And I said, well, you know, it's this amount. And he didn't pay it. I just sent him a statement telling him how much was done. But he kept asking me, come and do more work. You do more work and I'll pay you what I owe you. And I says, well, you know, let's get caught up first. And 6 months went by. I don't know. It was a long time went by and he never paid it. And I actually ran into him once in town. Town is a single building. We live in a very small community. Town was a storefront that was also the post office and the gas station and everything. No, that's it. That's the only building in the whole of the town, which is an unincorporated town. So it's pretty isolated. So anyway, I ran into him there, and I told him, what about that money you owe me? He says, well, you never come and do the other work I want you to do. And I says, well, what, you were supposed to get caught up on the work that I did. Pay for that, and then I'll come and do the other. But I don't want to put more labor into it until you get caught up. And he kind of hums and haws around. I was being real nice. And so he was saying all this. And I says, well, you know, I'm not going to send you any more statements. You got 30 days to get caught up with what you owe me. And then we'll talk about doing more work. Because he had all this other work he wanted me to do. And I says, you got 30 days. And then I'm going to turn it over to my collection agency. And just so you know. And I gave a little pause there. And I said, just so you know. My collection agency is Jesus Christ. You won't owe me anything after 30 days, but you're going to owe Jesus Christ. And when I was saying this, and I've told this story many times, I know some of you regular listeners have probably heard this. When I was saying this, I was thinking, like, that is the craziest thing I ever heard myself say. There was a part of my mind that, you know, the business side of my mind saying, gee, this guy's not going to pay me now. I just let him off the hook. Why did I even say that? But I was driven to say that. I was compelled to say that. And I did. And I told him that. And I said, and I warned him. I says, you do not want to owe Christ. You want to pay this off. That would be much better. But after 30 days, it's done. And you owe Christ, not me. And usually I don't tell this story except in the retreats. There's a lot of other stories I could tell you, and I'll save those for the retreats. But anyway, 30 days came and went. And, you know, and I was doing the ministry work then. I was writing books already. I really hadn't got the full understanding of what I have today, but I was beginning to. I was beginning to walk in the direction of the kingdom. I was beginning to seek out the righteousness of God in the way I was relating to everybody else. And anyway, the 30 days came, and during this 30 days, other things started happening. I was helping somebody out and doing favors. I won't go into all the details, but there were some people that needed assistance, and I was just helping them and doing favors. And one thing led to another, and I could tell you the whole details of how, you know, I was doing favor for this person, doing favor for this person, and this person came in on the scene, and all these favors were just trying to help out people in need, and they're all seemingly unrelated, but it all came about that suddenly there was a huge windfall in my hands that I had nothing to do with, no planning to make any money on or anything, and I never even touched the money. I took all the money and gave it to the church. And the money just so happens to be 10 times that which was owed me by this other fellow. All this happened within about 30 days, until the end of the 30 days, when I finally this windfall fell into my hands. It was actually started running until I actually saw the funds move from where they were coming to me to the church was a little bit more than 30 days, but it was basically the events had all taken place to make this come about with never any of my intention to make any money on any of this, just to help people out because I saw a need and I was driven to fulfill that need. And all this came about so I could do this. And lo and behold, at the end of the 30 days, within a few days at least, it could have been right on the very 30-day mark, I don't know, a windstorm came up and absolutely destroyed that fellow's barn, which was worth more than 10 times what he owed me. And I mean, it destroyed it. It actually rolled the metal up on the roof of his barn against the corrugations and threw it over into a pile. Literally, when I drove by, somebody told me about it, and I drove by about a week later, and there the barn was. It was literally almost in a pile. Just broke into splinters and nothing was usable anymore. Absolutely devastated. All within about 30 days. I got 10 times what he owed me. He lost 10 times what he owed me. And I thought, that's spooky. But I believe that actually, you know, but that's my personal belief. You don't have to believe that. That's the result of walking according to the ways of God. Now I see that. Now I would like to see, and I've mentioned it already earlier in this series, I'd like to hear a little bit more noise out there from you people. And I'm seeing little ripples of that in the waters of the world, that there's some of you are beginning to ripple with realization of what the gospel is really all about. And we're going to continue with this series in a moment when we come back to Keys of the Kingdom.
Things seem to be going wrong in the world today. Every aspect of our lives seems to be under attack sometimes. Many struggle to make sense out of it. What is really going on? Identifying the problem is critical to any solution. Many people claim to have answers. But what is the truth? What works? What has worked in the past? History does repeat itself, and you must learn from it. You have choices. We cannot change the course of history, but we may change our role in it. All roads lead to Rome. All roads lead to the kingdom of God. The question is, which way are you going? Join us to make sense out of it all for an iconoclastic look at the world yesterday, today and tomorrow and hear about the keys of the kingdom.
Well, welcome back to the Keys of the Kingdom. So we got two things. We got rippling in the water of righteousness, where I'm starting to see out there in the elders and the congregations and in the people of the world a certain righteousness. And part of that I see in this article written by somebody who isn't really a part of our network, but really probably ought to become a part of our network. And we should send him a copy of these shows because it's so much based on his article. And his name is Brandon Smith, and he wrote this article, Non-Participation and Decentralization as Primers for Revolution. And I started this off saying that Jesus Christ was a revolutionary. He had a revolutionary idea of everybody becoming responsible for themselves and gathering together as a nation of people based not on force, but on love for one another. And that you are bound by virtue and honor and caring for one another. That's a revolutionary idea today. It was the name of the game back in 1776. You wouldn't know that, hardly, from reading modern history books. But if you read as many history books as I have, and you read The Higher Liberty that talks about how virtue was the revolutionary cry of Americans in Europe, was becoming absolutely decimated by decadence at that time. And there was movements in the European community to get back to virtue. But in America, it was strong. And it was strong because life was hard on the frontiers of America. All of America was frontier at one time. But it was still a vast number of people had to be fiercely independent while at the same time learning to depend upon one another, but only by free will choice. This was echoed from a moment in time where in Jamestown and Plymouth both decided, if you don't work, you don't eat. There was no communist socialist system anymore. They set that idea aside and said, if you don't work, you don't eat. And if you need help, it's you're absolutely dependent upon asking for help from your neighbor. And your neighbor gets to choose to help you or not. This was a key element that made America great. Far this idea alone, beyond the Constitution, beyond the Revolution, beyond the musket, beyond anything, that idea alone, written in the hearts and minds of the people, saved and made America great. But we don't have that idea anymore. We have the idea that we get to go to the government who forces our neighbor to contribute to our welfare. They had the same idea in Judea at the time of Herod. And Christ was raised up in a system like that. But he was not a participator in that system. There were others who were not participators in that system. They participated in another system, preached another system, a provocative system that said you had to love one another. You had to care for one another. You had to gather together for the purposes of caring for one another. Not to get your ears tickled, but to care for one another. So anyway, let's continue with his article, Brandon Smith's article, and find out what he has to say. He says down here, in either case, you win. You have taken provocative measures to remove yourself as a cog in the machine. The machine can then, of course, try to demonize you or attack you, but ultimately they will attack from a place of social or moral weakness, and you will defend from a position of logistical and moral strength. Now, what does he mean, logistical and moral strength? I'll leave that for you to think. Let's go on and see what he has to say. Stop waiting for the system to change or collapse. Change the way you, and he puts it in all capital letters, you, Y-O-U, live and survive. build your own localized system and walk away. Now, I don't know what he means by walk away, but walk, what you should be doing is walking in the way of Christ. People that are still in the system, you help them. But according to your choice, you help those that have kingdom tracks in their hearts, that have expressed the righteousness correlative to liberty in their life. You help those people. The lazy, parasitical people, you let them go to the government. Let them go to their masters. But you help one another. You gather together with one another. You find the righteous amongst you, and you gather with one another. His sheep know his voice. And if I am speaking the ways of Christ, his sheep will hear that. I'm a shepherd, and my sheep know my voice. What do you think I'm talking about? He starts another heading, decentralization, here. He says, learn a vital trade skill. Grow your own food. Purchase resource-rich raw land. Learn self-defense methods beyond what law enforcement personnel are trained in, which is not too difficult. Take EMT training courses so that you can provide general and emergency medical care for your family. Get your children out of the state-run Common Core indoctrination centers and homeschool them. Build neighborhood watch groups, emergency response groups, barter markets, alternative economics. I'll add to that CSAs, community supported agriculture, which is, you can look that up, CSAs, community supported agriculture. Start supporting your local farmers. Start supporting those people in your community that you see the nature of the kingdom. They don't have to become members of His Holy Church, but they need to be seekers of righteousness. And this is going to mean that you're going to have to rebuke one another once in a while. And you're going to have to gather together in kind of community groups. But don't lose sight of righteousness. Focus on righteousness in your relationships with your community. It will pan out eventually. It will be a struggle. There will be blood in the streets. In other words, there will be, you know, backbiting and fighting amongst you. Expect that. Forgive that. This is why Jesus made forgiveness so important in his message. Forgive so that you may be forgiven. Because you're going to step on other people's toes. You're going to say something you shouldn't say. Forgive it. Seek righteousness in everything you do. And you're not going to be very good at it. You're going to stumble and fall, but keep at it. He goes on, decentralization is about dissolving our unbalanced relationship with the state and taking away their power to dictate how we live. Now, you can't take that power away by your own might. Don't get confused with that. You disarm them by being more righteous than they are. Why do you think the Egyptians showered the Israelites with gifts when they were leaving at Exodus? Because the Israelites had been a real FEMA for the Egyptians during the disasters and during the famines that had befallen Egypt shortly before that. Now, when I say FEMA, I refer to a faith emergency ministry auxiliary as opposed to a federal emergency management agency. That's what you need. Every church, every group, every community should realize they're a FEMA, a faith emergency ministry auxiliary that is there to help their community. Earthquakes, flood, fire, famine, break-ins, whatever. You're there for your neighbor in hope that your neighbor is there for you. This is what it means to live by hope. Do you think hope meant that you go to heaven when you die? It's hope that you're righteous and your neighbor is righteous with one another. Tomorrow will take care of itself. Jesus tells you this. Don't worry about tomorrow when you die. It doesn't make any difference. You can't change it anyway. You're to be seeking righteousness today because it's the righteousness of God. And that will automatically, without you even lifting a hand in any other direction, begin to dissolve the bands which have connected you with another, because the bands are your need for their benefits. You eat at the tribal trough and you owe the chief. That's the way it works. But if you don't eat at the tribal trough, something else will begin to take place. Something quantum, something metaphysical, something spiritual that will permeate your physical reality. And things will begin to change. And that's where faith comes in. Substance will come from that faith. If a core necessity is centralized into the hands of a select few, like it was with Saul, protection of society from invasion, then we start producing it ourselves and remove that option from their deck of cards. You cannot fight a corrupt system if you are dependent on the corrupt system. And you are dependent upon that corrupt system because you have been corrupted. You have thought that by electing somebody who can exercise authority one over the other, that you would become free, when in actuality, that common purse of rights brings you into bondage. So you must reverse the process. In order to reverse the process, you have to turn around and approach every problem in your local community and in your nation from a different point of view. There's a certain element of looking at your local community as if everything centers around that. Well, you're centered in your local community, but don't lose sight of kingdom. Attach your local community to sister communities all around you. And do this through the men you pick to help manage and serve your general public. You can't all do it yourself, and it can't be random. Like, I saw somebody who was hungry today, so I fed him. He'll probably starve before I see him again, but I fed him, and so I feel good. No, it doesn't work that way. You also don't want to hand $20 bills out to a window to some stranger on the street. If you want to be the government of the people, for the people, and by the people, you have to take the responsibility of government back into the hands of every individual elder of every single family, and only release control of your offering to men you trust, and keep an eye on them locally so that they do a good job, and keep an eye on them in the broader network that they choose wisely as well. The number of governments that use this system throughout history is remarkable. You don't know their history and you won't learn it in public schools, but there are actually many academics today that are writing about that. The very essence of globalism is centralized oversight of every aspect of our lives, he writes. When we allow ourselves to feed from the government or corporate trough, because he even uses the word himself here. I was originally quoting Rudyard Kipling, but he actually uses the word corporate trough. I haven't even read this whole article yet. I'm reading it for the first time to you. I read just a little ways into it, and I knew the spirit of this article was evidence of the spirit of Christ in somebody's heart. And if he's Jewish, I apologize, the spirit of Moses, because the spirit of Moses and the spirit of Christ are one and the same, because God is the same today as he was yesterday. Anyway, he talks about feed from the government or corporate trough because it's easier. We are essentially volunteering to be herded like animals. It is within the power of every single individual, no matter their age or financial circumstances, to find creative ways in becoming more independent. It is up to you. There are no excuses. And then he talks about revolution here. Now, some people are probably surprised that I've never even read this whole article. I've recommended it. I've written about it. And I'm reading it live here for the first time myself. I did skim some of it, but I could tell where this guy was coming from. Now, I'm not saying that he is a saint or that he's walking on water. I don't know the guy. I've never met him. Maybe I will someday. We'll see. We should have no illusions, he writes under his heading of revolution, that criminal elements of our government will simply shrug their shoulders and give up. When we decentralize, we show the world how irrelevant they are. They won't like that, and he knows that. And when I began to write the book Covenants of the Gods, the first chapter I took to my dad and gave it to him, and many of you have heard me say this before, took him 3 hours to get to those 5,000 words because he was looking everything up and thinking. He's a very calculated individual. And he came out and he said, I was right, but they're not going to like me. So the more right you get, you have to figure the unrighteous are not going to like you. But you got God on your side, or you will have once you repent and turn around and head back to your Father's house. Tyrants must remain relevant to the masses. Otherwise, they have no means to dominate except pure force. When that force is eventually applied, the only logical response is revolution. Decentralization is not a means to avoid such revolution. It is only a means to strengthen our position in preparation for the revolution. Now, I want to do some correcting here. Christ had revolutionary ideas because they were uncommon in the minds of everybody. John the Baptist had them. The followers of John the Baptist had them. Many other people I could tell you about at that time in history and hundreds of years before had those same ideas. But they were revolutionary in perspective to the general population. But he was not suggesting revolution in a violent way, and neither was John the Baptist. But what happens is the tyrants revolt against the law. They break the law. Eventually, they come to a point where they have to break the law. And when they do, they will be destroyed. And not by our hands, by other hands, more powerful hands than ours. The tyrant always falls upon his own sword. He will destroy himself. He won't realize it until it's too late, but that is ultimately what will come about. But we are only revolutionary in bringing back the revolutionary ideas of Christ and Moses and Abraham. Not because we are violent. We are not violent. We are nonviolent. But we're violent on ourselves. We will rebuke one another. We will seek righteousness at every opportunity. But they will come against us as Pharaoh came against the Israelites and were swallowed up by the sea. Now you can accept that as prophetic, but you may not understand the symbolism of it. But it's there. Anyway, here we go. We'll go on. He writes, there is no ideal revolutionary model, because the unique nature of one's epoch determines the nature of one's rebellion. However, I can say that any revolution that does not focus on the foundational culprits behind the offending tyrant is doomed to failure. The foundational culprits are us. We are the problem. That's what we must... And he may be straying here. I can't tell from his writings alone. We'll have to have a discussion. Wonderful opportunity for a campfire. Hope he comes to one of our festivals. But anyway, let me point out this, put it in your minds. In the American Revolution, who was revolting? Were the people revolting against the king, or was the king revolting against the people? If you read the Declaration of Independence, it was the king who was revolting. The people had already had their liberties. They were already guaranteed by their charters, which you probably don't know anything about. That's what their claim was. We write about it in Covenants of the Gods, and I think we cover it also in Contracts, Covenants, and Constitutions, that their revolution was that the revolutionary idea that if you don't work, you don't eat, that nobody's going to defend you unless you work to defend one another, that the responsibility was on your shoulder to deal with the weightier matters of law, judgment, mercy, and faith, which of course is what Christ said. There were Christian or so-called Christian zealots who were burning women at the stake, or at least hanging them, in the early days of America because of their ideas. So everybody who was in America did not understand the righteousness of God's way, but you were going to find it more in America than anywhere else. Now today, it's hard to find. I think it's lurking in the hearts and minds of many people, but they don't know how or what to do. And this is why they need to hear the real gospel of Christ. Because in the real gospel of Christ, the true gospel of Christ, and the true commandments of Christ, is the secrets of your salvation. But you have to seek the ways of Christ in righteousness, not in taking his name in vain. So anyway, the king was revolting. The Americans were standing for righteousness. This is why they won. Not because the majority was with them in America, because only about 30% were these landed freemen. 50,000, like I said, joined the Redcoats to fight these revolutionary individuals who were standing against the revolting of the king. So anyway, you're going to have to think about these things a little bit different. Go back and read the Declaration of Independence and find out who was revolting. The unwarranted usurpations of the king show us clearly that he was revolting. Go read our books. They're free. Go read them. Anyway, when I see the overt obsession, and again, now he's talking, I'm going to skip this section. He's talking about Barack Obama again, and I don't want to pick on him, but he does mention in this sentence the development of socialism in America. Well, public schools are socialism. Social Security is socialism. Unemployment is socialism. All these things are socialism. Your money system is a socialist money system that comes right out of the temples of Egypt. You don't know that because you went to public school, but if you read our books, we can show you. There's 700, 800 footnotes in some of those books. You can look it up yourself. Anyway, he says he has, he's talking about different presidents' legislative efforts. I'm going to skip over that. You can go to the article and read that. I'm just not going to deal in that because, again, my perspective is the problem is you, and he has begun to realize that. So I'm not going to say anything bad against the government. The government is the victim of your sloth and avarice as a people. And now you are a victim of the beast which you have created, because you've all had a little bit of beastie in your own hearts. So now you have to repent of that, and as you do, forces in the universe will begin to change. But anyway, let's get to this. Who financed their campaign? He says, who taught them the internationalist methodologies they now implement? Who really controls money and thus economy and thus politics in this country? Really, you don't need to know their names. You need to know that you don't. We'll talk about the money issue a little bit when we get back. I don't know where he's going to go with the rest of this, but when we next time on Keys to the Kingdom, we'll talk about some of these issues of money and how a free government actually operates. Not that you can jump there suddenly, but so that you know what direction you want to head in. You still must be friends with the unrighteous mammon, because you are under contract and you don't become righteous by breaking agreement. You are surety for debt. You are in the bondage of Egypt. There is a solution, but you must change first. And the fruits of that change will alter the realms of the universe in which we are now playing out this game, this most dangerous game. So remember this. Do not curse the king. He's there for a reason. You need to be an overcomer of unrighteousness. And until then, may peace be upon your house, and may God be with you.
You have been listening to The Keys of the Kingdom with Brother Gregory of His Holy Church. For more information on the educational ministry provided by His Holy Church and Brother Gregory, including services, counseling, lectures, books, and other audio materials, please write to His Church at Summer Lake, Box 10, Summer Lake, Oregon, 97640. You can also find us on the web at www.hisholychurch.net.